Hello and welcome to the Ludic Insights podcast. This series explores themes and topics relating to all things digital. My name is Paul Ashcroft. I'm from the Ludic Group and co-author of the book Alive, Digital Humans and Their Organisations, available on Amazon, Kindle and bookstores near you. I'm here with my co-author and fellow business partner, Garrick Jones.
Hey!
We're delighted to be joined today by Sibyl Crisafalloni and Vicky Stewart from DDB Global Marketing and Communications Agency. Sibyl, perhaps if we start with you, if you could just tell us a little bit about what you're doing and a little bit about your work.
Yeah, sure. I'm Sibyl and I've been working in advertising most of my life. So for about 18 years in advertising and communication agencies, I'm a global business director looking after brands and how we bring that global brand idea to life in different cultures, different languages and different markets.
One of the things that we have been thinking about and worrying about very much is this idea of digital humans. And in a world where we're becoming more and more and more digital, what does it mean? You're working with an agency that is constantly communicating, getting the attention of humans. What does it mean for connecting with digital humans at the moment? Sibyl, what do you think?
Well, it's a loaded question. It's a difficult one because to connect to a digital human, it means at every touch point, how to best tell that story, that idea, and bring it to life that's relevant and personal to every individual consumer. Basically, digitization has made the consumer very, very individual and personal, and therefore the creative idea has also got to be very personal and targeted to that consumer and to their everyday digital life.
Have you seen examples recently where that's been done really well? What have you seen that you like?
Well, we were talking about a previous example about Alexa and Persil. I think they've done it very well about everyday life, stains, washing, something that I can relate to. And basically anything you ask or look up, or it's a fountain of knowledge and information that's targeted to myself and my needs as a mother. So I find it very relevant and pertinent in my everyday life.
So Alexa, one of these voice-activated systems, becoming more and more present in everybody's home. Not sure whether I want the devices in my home advertising to me, but maybe we can come back to that. I want to pick up on this idea of new channels.
Yes.
So one of the things I imagine you're thinking about and your customers are thinking about is how to use the and coordinate the array of different channels now available to connect with your customers, with their customers. What's your experience of that, Vicky?
I think more and more it's becoming about that pathway to purchase and understanding the journey that a customer goes on and how can you reach them at the key moments in the most relevant and pertinent channel that they have indicated they want to talk to you in. So for me, it comes back to this idea of contextual relevancy. I think that, you know, we're talking about digital humans, but we have to kind of remember we're all humans. And so it's about that blurring for me of the on and offline and the overall experience. And more consumers are happy to give their data. They will signal to you through engagement or non-engagement, which is also a digital signal, what they're willing to share and what they're interested in. But I think for our consumers, it's about how do you expand that out and how do you do that in a really transparent and authentic way? So how do brands walk with you through the full experience and not just getting you over the line to buy, because that's not enough anymore.
Can agencies use these different channels to build a fuller picture of the customers that they're looking to connect with?
Yes, completely, Paul. We are now in a position where the story we tell has to be connected at every touch point with our digital consumers. We can't just switch on and off our story. It's an ongoing conversation across the 360 channels that we have to use. It's all about telling our consumer what we're about, being authentic, being real, but being there in their everyday life and connecting with them at every touch point.
And I think the challenge for us as an industry is, you know, you used to start big. You'd come up with the TV ad and then you just kind of roll it out across all the other channels. And now it's about stretching those creative ideas and concepts and oftentimes starting small. How do you start in the digital and the social space and then scale up as opposed to the other way around?
That's really interesting. Can we just explore that a little bit more? So what are some of the ways in which you start small and then grow from there? Do you think of any particular examples you've used?
I suppose the most obvious for me is user-generated content. So where you, as a brand, you can reach out to your consumers, to your stakeholders, and ask them to get involved. You know, I think Vanish, we seem to be on a stain removal trend. I think Vanish does that really well. You know, they have an entire YouTube channel which is dedicated to people submit, this is how I got rid of gravy or red wine or oil or whatever. And it's become this self-fulfilling cycle or ecosystem where people now trust it. It's added credibility to them as a brand.
Were you telling us earlier that the most use of Alexa and Siri and Google Home is people asking questions about how to get rid of stains?
Yes, that and pets.
And cats. Cats are everywhere.
You're listening to The Alive, Digital Humans and Their Organizations podcast. Discover and download previous episodes on iTunes, Spotify, and all major podcast hosting sites. Search Ludic Insights.
It's interesting to see which of the online shopping brands are so present in that space. And the easier it is for you to kind of go, oh, I have an account with them. Yeah, I'll order my shopping from them. Next thing, you know, you say, do my weekly shop and the stuff is being delivered.
It just creeps in, doesn't it?
It creeps in. It's so clever.
They make it easy.
I'm going to dish the dirt slightly. It was Paul who gave me the Alexa as a birthday present.
He's trying to convert you.
It's not a... Well, I've seen his kids kind of, you know, switch on the lights and make the music happen and so on using theirs. But the funny thing, of course, is you get this small gift and the next thing you found you've spent quite a lot of money on other things just to kind of bring it all to life. I mean, it's great fun, but it does change your relationship with technology. And the other thing that I've been very aware of is how it is pretty human. I mean, it's not an artificial relationship with a brand or an advertising. It's very, very connected to your everyday life. Food, shopping, transport, stain removal, I guess.
Yeah.
You know, questions around all the things you need to make life easier. Yeah. I guess, does that make me a digital human even more so than I was before?
Yes, I would say so. I mean, that's all about trying to integrate your offline self to your online self. I think it's going to become more and more a seamless connection between the two. I think in 10 or 20 years' time, our kids' generation will not even see it as offline and online. They will just see it, this is me. This is, as Vicky had said, my 3D self. It's what I'm all about. It's not this or that. It's just one part of you.
Can we explore that a little bit more, this idea of the 3D self? Vicky, what do you mean?
Well, I think it's back to what I said at the start, where we talk about digital humans. That would imply that there's non-digital humans. Mm. And I just think we're already, as you've just given the example, you know, it's this technology is creeping into our everyday lives. And I'm not sure it's as siloed or as simple to go, there's a digital life and a non-digital life. I think that people sit down now and watch TV and they have their tablets or their mobile phones in their hand and they're scrolling and they're engaging with on
they're
Twitter.
They're researching and tweeting at the same time.
Exactly. So it's about recognizing that behaviours are changing and that we're still rounded 360 or 3D individuals, and how do we talk to people on all those different levels? It's not as simple as going, okay, you're online on your smartphone now and we're going to take you on this journey.
And is this what you mean by the word omni-channels?
Yes. For me, omni-channel means 360. So it's how do we use all of the channels at our disposal from, you know, whether that's Twitter or YouTube through to TV, through to email displays. And it's about leveraging all of those channels because they each have a role to play. And I think that sometimes clients can still be very siloed in thinking, well, it's all about TV or it's all about digital. And actually those things feed off each other and work together.
And it's not only about the consumer. It's about thinking of people as human beings
100%.
And making our lives easier, I hope. I mean, do you not think it's making our lives more complicated?
I think it comes back to insight, doesn't it? Like, you know, anything that we want to do for our clients, you know, a business's goals and objectives, you know, we have to take it back to insight about the consumer and what we're trying to do. And so can we make it easier? Can we make it simpler? If you make it difficult, people just won't use it. Yeah. And there's countless examples of that. Please don't ask me for one right now because I don't have one. but I think that, it's about making it easy.
And time and place. I mean, I'm just thinking about the online learning, for example. You know, 5 years ago, a lot of universities and a lot of things were experimenting with that and trying to go online. Didn't happen, didn't take off. No. Took 5 years before people were ready, perhaps. And perhaps we had the apps in place where it became easy for people to do stuff.
On that, I did a digital mums course. Took me 6 months, all online. Mm. And we used Slack and a lot of other, let's say, technologies that could bring us together. You're in a group of mums and you form this community all online. Mm. We never met in the 6 months until the very end when we graduated and we said, can we actually meet up? And you become a social media manager through it. Mm. But it really showed me how you could just use technology to bring you all into one room to talk about all the briefs that we were working on and deliver the course. It was all 100% online. I think to Vicky's point as well, as a communication agency and brands, they're looking to create content. And it's all about the content you're creating. And the content has to be relevant and has to be targeted to the individual consumer at the right time so that they can engage with it.
And one of the things that the digital channels are giving us more and more and more of, and as we build this more complete 3D picture of ourselves as humans, is data. So could you talk a little bit about how you are working with data and how data is changing the way connecting, communicating, marketing with people is now?
I mean, from my point of view, I think data enables us as a group of professionals to become more relevant, to become more targeted. Whereas I think in the past, you know, advertising could be a little bit, excuse the phrase, spray and pray. You just kind of pushed it out there and you hoped that some of it would stick. And now you're able to be hyper local, hyper target and hyper relevant. And I think those things are what help move a business along. And also then make it more, consumers are okay with that because you're speaking to me and it's relevant to me and I'll share my data with you for that.
What about when you try and buy a pair of trainers online and you buy your pair of trainers and for the next 6 weeks you get all the trainers being fed into your feed?
It's very annoying.
It is.
Well, that's something that as communication agencies we can't control, but I think all the big companies like Google and Facebook are trying to address that.
Yeah.
And as we were talking earlier, is there a shift? Because data is changing and data is going to become much more protected and potentially each individual will own their own data. Actually, is there a shift to not feed you the same thing over and over again? I saw that you bought this and therefore you will like this, but actually here's something new or different.
And then the other big thing that I think we should talk about is what about the question of advertising and marketing and targeting skewing the neutrality of the internet or the neutrality of all the communications connections that we get, the information that's being served us. And that has implications, say, some people on democracy and on the flatness of society. And I don't want to get into our experience of the last 3 years politically and how that may have been skewed by nefarious individuals playing with data. But
I think that's a very it's a very big question. I mean, you could argue that Google algorithms in their own right are not, they're skewed to your own personal searches. Let's put it that way. They always have ads at the top, but they're always skewed. So the more you search a certain thing, the more it will come up. It will be the first thing that they will feed back to you. So nothing is completely neutral. And I think that's fair. It couldn't be neutral because it's fed to you. It's personal to you. And so therefore, it's your own Google search to make it more relevant to you. Is that democratic or not? We get into other realms of what is democratic and how do you define democracy. But I won't go there for now. But I think so far, what brands are trying to do has been very democratic because everything is more and more transparent and much more honest. Things are labeled as ads. Even influencers now have to say if something is being promoted by them, not just being talked about in their own way. It's something. So the transparency is bringing much more visibility to everybody out there.
Do you think it's changing the way people see their own data and the use of their own data? And where do you see that going in the future?
I would say absolutely. I think where that's going in the future, I suppose, I mean, I wish I knew. I think that there'll be a question around ownership of our own personal data in the future and how we control that and whether we monetize that or we choose not to monetize that. I think that that digital footprint and our data is going to be a really contentious and interesting subject, and I'm not sure we fully understand it yet as consumers. If I step back and think of in my own life, I don't think we're fully aware of how much we give away without even realizing it. And I think that's interesting. That's going to be really...
I have to say, I'm less worried about it than I used to be. I used to be like, oh my God, you know, everybody's looking and guard my data. And now I don't care. I mean, literally, I just, because of Alexa, I just ticked a box, which meant Alexa has all my, you know, my contacts on the cloud somewhere. Not mining it, but certainly it's there. And, you know, maybe 5 years ago, that would have been problematic for me, but I'm less worried about it. Maybe because we're becoming inured to it in some way, but also because we don't, it's not as scary as we may have thought it was.
No, and I think it's the trade-off is, to Sabeel's point, I get stuff that is more relevant to me and more interesting to me. I suppose the risk of that is that I'm therefore closed, whether I mean to or not, I'm closing myself off. So, you know, whereas when you would go online and you would search for something and you would get a load of random information and you would have to maybe put a bit more effort in to find stuff, and then you would stumble across other thoughts and opinions and pieces like that.
Oh, I love now, that you're bringing this up.
Now, because of the algorithms and because the computers think they know you, you're getting stuff based on your past searches.
So is this something
and it becomes a self-fulfilling prophecy.
Yeah. Should we be worried about this? Because we were talking, Sabeel, earlier about creativity and how, and Paul and I are very interested in creativity and curiosity. We're writing a new book about it at the moment. But this idea that, as always, creativity, creative thinking and thinking large is stimulated by random bumping up against new facts and ideas that you may not have encountered before. And if the algorithms are serving us what we've looked for in the past, are we not narrowing ourselves, you know, in danger of sort of just going down a small box, that it becomes a reflection of our previous search history and doesn't allow us the kind of fabulous serendipitous encounters that keep it open?
I can only talk from personal experience, and I would say it doesn't narrow it, because it's still, you're still able to search on your own what you want. So to bring it back to a personal example, one of my children might have dyslexia. And so I typed in dyslexia last night. And suddenly it took me to another world where I could look at blogs of other mums talking about it. I could look at official articles being written by the Harvard Review. That wasn't in my search history up until then. But what it allowed me to do is go into another world of possibilities and read up as much as I wanted to and connect to people that I could relate to. Now, obviously, it will become part of my history and I will be fed this. But I think the algorithms, they're getting more and more clever, if that's the way to phrase it, and more aware that if I logged onto it once and then stopped, it will stop feeding it after a while to me.
So but you're saying it's about being human. It's that the human is still important to keep things open.
Yes.
You're listening to The Alive, Digital Humans and Their Organizations podcast. Discover and download previous episodes on iTunes, Spotify, and all major podcast hosting sites. Subscribe to the Ludic Insights channel now. Search Ludic Insights.
So I have a question for both of you. If we can, we're all digital humans.
Yeah.
Three pieces of advice that you would give us as digital humans going into the future.
Ooh. Oh, gosh. Three pieces of advice. Be open-minded.
Yeah.
See everything as a possibility. Be curious, as you say. Don't take it at face value, but really be open to it. See it as something positive that enhances your life. So be curious. I'm trying to recall now. Be curious, be open-minded. And
see everything as a possibility.
As a possibility. That would be my three.
Mine, well, I agree with all those. I think that if I think of it from a work perspective, I would say contextual relevancy. So making sure that we're speaking to consumers and or humans, we're valuing that relationship and we're speaking to them in a relevant, contextually relevant way. And I think it would be about, I agree. Be open-minded and be curious and see where you can go.
Yeah. Obviously have filters, and we're not talking about children now. We're not talking about certain things that have happened. But I think the AI, technology, digital, all these words are not words to be scared of. They're words that will just make our lives better. It's just trying to find that balance and understand how they can help us as opposed to how they hinder us.
We seem to be navigating into a future, and it's not a known future. Correct. And any exploration into an unknown future geography land, technology, mode of transport can run into difficulties and run into problems. And I guess it's about minimizing the damage of that and then learning to improve from it.
And personal accountability, I think, is important as well. You know, I've had more friends this year who have kind of said, oh, I'm taking a digital detox. I'm stepping back from Instagram because I found myself going down the rabbit hole for an hour every night.
I think it constantly self-corrects. We've had a long time of people just openly sharing everything they ever do. Now, and just trusting that that's not an issue. But for hundreds, maybe thousands of years, we've allowed governments and the ruling classes to own our data, to have access to our data. Now we're giving our data to companies. We have to trust. Can we trust that they're not going to use those for needs that don't necessarily serve our purpose?
But I think more and more, sorry to interrupt you, I was going to say, and this goes right back to what you said before in terms of, you know, the value. It has never been easier for consumers to go elsewhere, you know, through, if you think of the telco market, through legislation and all that kind of stuff. Yeah. It's becoming easier and easier.
Banking,
for us to
telco,
for us to move, all of them.
Switching is something that can happen.
And so therefore, consumers can, and or as individuals, humans, we can vote with our feet, we can go elsewhere, and with our wallets. So therefore the pressure, I think, is on businesses to value that relationship. And if we don't feel that they're valuing our data and what we're giving them, then we'll go elsewhere.
I'm fascinated about the digital human, and I'm fascinated about our experience as digital humans. How is that shifting in terms of narrative and storytelling and our experience of being a digital human?
Well, it's interesting you've said the word storytelling, because in the world that I work in, storytelling is key to everything. And personally, I don't think that has changed. To tell a good story has always had a beginning, a middle, an end. There's always sort of a peak and a trough, and you build it up. That has not changed, and we must never lose sight of that. It's just how we tell that story and the channels we use and the conversation we're building that's changing. But the story will always be there. And for a brand to be relevant and to be honest and real, it needs to have a very good story. So creatively, that's fundamental for everything that we do.
And presumably, their customers are more able to be part of that brand story.
And correct. That with, I mean, I worked on Knorr and Dove for a very long time, and it was all about being real and authentic and bringing those people from off the streets into our everyday storytelling lives.
I think it's about contextual relevancy, which is, as a brand, if a customer or a consumer has interacted with you, then it's about your reaction back, or the next step should feel like a natural conversation rather than just saying the same message over and over. For me, that's the change that digital human expects.
Is it
we
like
as
theater?
Consumers.
You know, I went to see Gwendolyn Christie, you know, from Star Wars
Thrones.
And Game of Thrones, who we adore. She was in Midsummer Night's Dream at the Bridge Theatre.
Yeah,
phenomenal. And she was, Titania and so on. And the thing about Shakespeare is you always get led through, as you say, a journey of you go down and up and around.
He was the best storyteller, one of the best storytellers.
Absolutely. And that whole thing of being taken as a piece of theatre. If we extrapolate that, is the theatre of being a digital human being personalized? Does that, you talk about being a 3D experience or a 3D human and omni-channels. Does that mean I will be experiencing the narrative or the story of something I'm engaged in as a series of events that
build
and tell and create my
and
own narrative
into different ones? Yes, I think the key word there was engagement. So to Vicky's point, you contextualize and work with each individual, but it's about how do you best engage with that story, and that story cannot keep feeding you the same story. It has to change and evolve as you change and evolve. So it needs to keep you engaged.
I love the analogy of the theatre. I think that's really interesting because it takes you to, it's about signposting and so that everybody understands what's going on. But it's also, you can imagine it, seeing it from different angles. Mm. Or the analogy that I use with brands that I work with very often is a country house. You want to think of it as a country house, and consumers have lots of different entry points, different ways that they can come to you to find the information that they need.
The experience is everything, isn't it?
Yeah.
And it's becoming more personalized, you know.
It has to be more personalized, and it has to be relevant.
Yes.
Above all else, it has to be relevant. And the latest, I believe, reports from some of the big consultancies is that people will pay more. People are willing to pay a premium for and trade their information if it means they get more relevancy in terms of the communications from the brands they want.
Yeah.
It's
and if they don't get it, they'll go elsewhere. Sorry.
To a brand that the brand understands me. It's all about who they feel they have a connection with and who they feel they can relate to and relates to them. Mm. Doesn't mean they're always right or always giving them the exact call to action they need, but they relate to it and they feel that brand understands me.
And sometimes it's about not having a call to action at all.
Yes.
And knowing and understanding that full customer experience and customer journey and when it is relevant to have that and not.
I mean, I'm trying to make it, bring it down to things that are relevant to me, for example. If you have Paul and I are writing this book about curiosity at the moment. We'll talk about that more in podcasts to come. But one of the key things in our research we've really got to was that activities are everything. If you have an activity, if you have a reason, for example, I live abroad and I need to speak another language just because I need to get my house painted and things. There's nothing more than being practical and having a project to drive the curiosity and drive the questioning you have. And I'm thinking that maybe just as true for I want to have a dinner party. I want to have six friends around. We want to have a nice time. What should I cook? How do I cook it? Where do I get it from? What's unusual? What's new that we can experience? All of these things are opportunities for my experience prior to having my friends around that I think could be driven as a digital human. It makes life much easier if you've got access to information to help you down that road.
Well, isn't that the best thing about the internet and the fact that we all walk about with our devices all the time? You know, in the past, you would have maybe had to go to the library or had to go and, you know, speak to lots of different people. You had to make real effort to find out how you could cook a different meal or create a different ambience. And now you just go online and type it in and you have a plethora of options from Pinterest to Instagram to, you know, YouTube.
Well, we just bought a new sort of mixing machine which comes with internet connection.
Oh, wow.
Which is a surprise.
Well, I think, though, we need to bear in mind the internet is there to facilitate. You will still have that connection with other humans on a one-to-one because it will lead to that dinner party and so therefore you will all get together. So I see it as facilitating my life, helping me, being, let's say, my friend on my journey, but it doesn't stop me from going to the library, meeting other mums. That will never get replaced and I hope it will never get replaced. And as we talk about the future, about what does it mean to be a digital human and the future of it, I think it will become seamless with technology. It will become integrated within our lives to such a way that we are human and humans will always want that connection, physical connection with another human. We work best in tribes, but it will facilitate that getting together. It will facilitate experiences to make them much more holistic and ever engaging.
I hope you've read the chapter on tribes in Paul and my book.
I have. And even in the Digital Mums course, it was like, what's your tribe? That was the biggest question that we were working on. Like, what's my tribe? Who do I want to be connected to? Mm. Online and offline, which will become seamless very soon. But I think ultimately, the human connection, the physical connection will always be there. You need that. As a parent, as a friend, it helps in so many ways. But the digital world will just make that much more seamless and help you to get there.
Yeah, I think there's a role for personal accountability and responsibility here because you do have, you know, I think WhatsApp and some of these things lull us into a false sense of security that, oh yeah, I've spoken to my friends or I've, you know, I'm up to date with everybody. And so therefore, all of a sudden, it's 3 months goes by until I suddenly realize, oh yeah, okay, I haven't seen people in a while and let's get together and have a dinner. And I think that there's a fine line. And I think that is going to be, finding that line is going to be what's going to be the challenge as we move forward as individuals and as brands and consumers.
So your challenge for us is to both be digital, but to remember to be human and fight to be human.
Yeah.
We're talking about digital humans. So it's how do we bring those two together and make them as seamless and integrated as possible?
This has been a really great conversation. I have, if I may, one more question for you both. So maybe I'll start with you. What's your prediction for the future in terms of how best to connect with digital humans?
Ooh, I think the conversations that we are having in our workplace is around agility. So how do you remain agile and develop content and plans that will enable you to connect with consumers on their terms? So I think that's the big challenge as we move forward, is that agility, because I think a lot of big organizations are big ships and it takes them a while to turn. and to not to be siloed and to be agile.
Sibylle?
From my point of view, I think I've mentioned it before, but and I'm speaking more from personal experience rather than from my brand experience. But I would say it's how to make it seamless and how to bring it, rather than being separated, my digital human and my offline human, let's say, it all becomes one and it becomes a much more seamless experience. That would be my prediction for the future.
Thank you.
And good luck with your next book.
Yeah, thank you very much.
thank you for having us. It's been great.
Great.
Yeah, thank you. I've enjoyed talking with you. Thanks very much.
Thank you.
Thank you for listening to The Alive, Digital Humans and Their Organizations podcast. You can subscribe to this podcast and explore previous episodes on iTunes, Spotify, and all major podcast hosting sites. Search Ludic Insights.